Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner, front and center this hour. A big week ahead for your money. Inflation, rates, earnings, all taking center stage. The investment committee setting you up for all of that. Joining me for the hour today, Jenny Harrington, Steve Weiss, Jim Labenthal. We're all at post nine today. Let's check the market. So we were green across the board, not so much anymore. S&P and the Dow dipping just a touch negative. There's a NASDAQ hanging just a touch positive. But Weiss, this is a big week. CPI, PPI, minutes this week kicking off, and we are coming off a tough week for stocks. So set it all up for us.
It's a critical week. And the reason is that we've seen such a big backup in rates. Mm. If you have inflation numbers that are not market friendly, you could actually see the 2-year go back above 5%. It's not that far away. So right now, if you're an equity investor and you're a little concerned about the market, you're going to go into the 2-year as opposed to the 10-year because you're getting near 4.8% yield. So why not? So, look, you've got three data points, as you point out. I do think it's too early for the increase in commodity prices, particularly energy, you know, oil, to have filtered through the system, even to PPI. But nonetheless, we've seen some hotter numbers, not significantly hotter, but hot enough to cause that backup in rates. And potentially, you've got a market that can turn either way aggressively. And I do mean aggressively.
Yeah. So Jonathan Krinsky at BTIG is, we're going to address rates in a minute, but the technical issues that the market is going to grapple with and have to overcome to some respects are not insignificant. He has a note out today in which he talks about the trend being broken, broke the trend the S&P did from the October lows, as long as SPX remains below 5250. And of course, we are below 5250. We would view this as a valid change in tone. And the 50-day moving average is 5083. Keep an eye on that, too. Hasn't been tested since November, and that seems likely to get a test, Jim. So you've got a couple of tests, let's just say, as the week begins. Technically, and then rates are certainly a test. And that's before we even get to PPI, CPI, and earnings.
Yeah, I'll get to the technicals in just a second. I want to come back to what Steve was saying on the CPI, which you mentioned as well. You know, it's been 2 months in a row that we've had bad inflation reports. I mean, inflation meaningfully above expectations. If you get a third one in the row, folks, I don't like what's about to come out of my mouth, but if that happens, I fear that you're going to start to hear Fed speak about another rate hike, and that's where the game changes. Okay, so that's why this report matters so much. This is an equity market that is 1% off of its high, as measured by the S&P 500. So it is clearly digesting the fact that any rate cuts are most likely to happen in the second half of this year, that maybe we're going to get two, not even likely three at this point in time. And as some Fed speakers like Neel Kashkari, the Minneapolis Fed president, has been saying, maybe you get no Fed cuts this year. The markets are fine with that. What the markets will not be fine with is if we pivot back to rate hikes. And that's why this CPI is kind of important. I'm not trying to be overly dramatic.
No, I think that given what happened with prior reads. Now, I could take a little bit of issue with, you know, if it's a little bit hot, hikes back on
Fine.
The table. I think if anything, it just continues to push off cuts.
I want you to be right. I want you to be right, and I hear you a little bit. Okay, there's always a rounding number, but let's, you know, the first one that we got that was bad was January. Everybody was like, it's a blip. Second one, you're like, maybe inflation's not coming down. You get three in a row that are hotter than expected, and it means inflation is not under control. Now, the ameliorating circumstance here, and here's another controversial, I don't mean this to be a hot take, but the idea of the Fed raising rates into a presidential election cycle. We all know, we're taught in business school and, you know, at our father's knee that the Fed is independent. But still, they've got to think about what the implications are politically if they're raising rates
okay.
back
that's
half
so
this year.
One thing on the three, when he mentions three in a row, that's actually an important number because most, you know, or I wouldn't say most, but a lot, at least the ones I know, look at an average of 3 months for employment, for basically all economic data
right.
to show that it's a trend.
So Goldman's Tony Pescarello He addresses, Jenny, the most important issue for markets right now. I think we can all agree with this. When do higher rates begin to bite? Now he's talking about the stock market. This was the most asked question of the week. The history book suggests that a 2 standard deviation move in a 10-year note, equivalent to around 60 basis points today over a month, is when impingement really kicks in. Given we closed the books at 420 last week, the simple rule of thumb argues that a move towards 4.80 is where things would get tricky for stocks. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that.
Nope.
There were some suggestions that 4.50 is a line, a significant line in the sand. But how would you address his question? You give me your own answer.
Okay.
When do higher rates begin to bite?
I think 480 is probably realistic. And I read the Jamie Dimon letter this morning. It was fantastic. I encourage all of you to read it also. And what Jamie says is, he's like, look, when we saw interest rates go up by 2%, we saw the market come down by 20%. So does that then suggest that if we see interest rates on the long end at the 10-year go up by 50 basis points, does that mean a 5% correction? I'm not sure how linear it is, but it definitely hurts. And we see it all the time when our clients are calling us and asking us, should I put money in bonds? Right? And at 5% or almost 5% on the 10-year, that question becomes more valid. If money's moving into bonds, you cannot justify a 21 times multiple on the S&P 500. I don't know if it goes from 21 to 19, 21 to 18. I don't know where it goes, but at 480 on the 10-year, it gets to be a competitive threat for equities.
See, Jenny makes a great point. Doesn't she, Weiss, in that, you know, we have justified the higher multiple, certainly compared to the 10-year averages, across the entire major average spectrum. We are above the historical average for everything, okay? We've justified it in large respects, in part, new trends, AI, GLP-1s. We've also justified it because of the new trend of rate cuts, rates coming down. So you could say, well, you can carry a higher multiple.
Yep.
If rates aren't coming down, in fact, if they're backing up, then we need to question the multiple, don't we? Unless earnings just blow you out of the water, and they're not expected to blow you out of the water. They're expected to be pretty decent.
They're expected to be decent, but let's keep in mind the revisions. I think we've seen large revisions since, I think it's 2019, in terms of downward revisions in the S&P earnings. Look, Jenny is right. Right, because obviously, if rates are low, it's a higher multiple because there's more growth. But that was my point earlier. And I don't think you have to look at the 10-year. I think you can look at the 2-year. Now, if you want, you can look at a 1-year. But if, as an equity investor primarily, I don't look for the 10-year to high. It's a high unless it's a high rate. I'll look at the 2-year, right? Because I've got a 5% yield just about in the 2-year, and that will allow me to wait out anything and get a good return. And that's going to be the one that is also going to go, the value will go up, the rate will go down.
So Raymond James says the recent rise is ultimately going to be reversed. Don't you think look, the reason why the market hasn't had a major hissy fit over the rise in the backup in rates is because aren't rates going up for the right reason?
Yes.
As Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, told Sarah Eisen over in China, let's listen to what she said, because she makes the case of why we have the backup.
The U.S. is firing on all cylinders. I mean, in terms of short-term performance, inflation is coming down. The job market is very strong. Growth has really been a lot stronger than I would have expected at this stage. We had 3.1% growth last year. Inflation's coming down. Labor supply is up.
So is Secretary wrong?
No, she's right. But I mean, that's happening in spite of higher interest rates. Certainly, she's not suggesting because of. But here's where I'm going with this.
No, but rates you know, if you say rates can rise for the right reason because growth is good.
Eventually, there are some negative circumstances that come out of this. We know what they are,
no doubt.
Right? I mean, auto sales are not going to thrive if we get interest rates going higher from here. They're doing well in spite of higher interest rates. Credit card receivables are hanging in there. We know delinquencies have picked up, folks. They've gone back to the normalized curve of where they were back before the COVID pandemic. But, you know, if they go higher, you're going to see those delinquencies get worse. It is not easy to be a young person making money and keeping up with the cost of living these days. So you can't go much higher here.
At the same time, you got Chris Harvey of Wells Fargo raising his S&P 500 target to 5535. that equities still have some upside. And yeah, there may be more volatility while you have rates backing up and all the like, but at the end of the day, you're about, Jenny, to start a new trend for the Fed, we think. And that is a regime of rate cuts. In a period of time where growth remains pretty good and earnings hang in and the new trends and everything kicks together and offsets what is a, you know, okay. So it's a little upsetting to some of the bulls and their nerves are being tested by the backup in rates. But overall, stocks can still do quite well. 55.35.
Here's the thing. To get to 55.35, you're not going to get multiple expansion, right? We're not getting past 21 times. Or maybe we get to 22, but that's getting pretty stretchy. So what you need to get to 55.35 is E. You need the earnings to work. And I think that's where things get a little tricky. And that's where these higher interest rates and which end of the curve they're higher at gets particularly dicey. So to your point, Steve, like the short end's really important. If the short end comes down and that actually boosts corporate earnings because a lot of borrowing is short, you know, it releases cash. Maybe individuals are out there and they're like, okay, I can't get 5% on my money markets anymore. Money flows in. Corporate earnings are better because their interest rates are fine. Then earnings can work. What I worry about is that when, and this is bringing it back to Janet Yellen for a sec, that Janet Yellen is correct in this moment, right? And when we were talking about interest rates at the long end coming down and that they kind of have to, what if they don't? Because what I think happened last fall was very interesting. When we saw the 10-year bump to 5%, why did it bump to 5%? Not because the Fed was doing anything, right? Not because there were different expectations for cuts or hikes. Why? Because the U.S. credit, when the world saw how fiscally irresponsible we are, the U.S. credit at the long end of the curve bumped up. And so I think that's where things can get dicey. If the long end sustains, right, and maybe earnings can't work as hard as they need to get to the 55.
Haven't we learned our lesson of being right in the moment has been really all that's mattered for
that's
this market?
For sure.
Or you missed it. Because if you were preoccupied for the last 18 months with the what if, you lost. You were not invested in the right things. You were not fully invested in equities. You missed an unbelievable rise in stocks from the, I'm just saying you have to be fully invested in equities. You can be invested in credit.
I knew where you were going.
I get it. My point though, if you spent the what if over the last 18 months and you, and that colored your investment.
Right.
Can I field this?
You missed.
Right.
Can I field this? Because there was a period of time, namely 2022, where I was feeling pretty stupid. And I was here on the desk being optimistic, and I saw a lot of things going right, but the market was going against me. And I will tell you, just factually, the numbers are in your favor to be optimistic. Now, I am not saying go suck nitrous oxide, you know, laughing gas, and become a silly boy about it. But the truth of the matter is markets go higher over time periods. They go higher. And if this market is going to go higher, the 55.35, I'm sorry, whose estimate was
Harvey,
that?
Chris Harvey,
okay.
Wells.
So you know what? That's roughly 20 times the current estimates for next year's earnings. That's not outlandish. Now, folks, we're at 5,100 at my firm, Cerity Partners. We're not raising it just yet. We need to see a little bit more in terms of those earnings.
Here's Adam Parker.
But it's not ridiculous.
Here's a checklist from Adam Parker on why he thinks the market continues to go higher. Accommodative Fed, check. Gross margin expansion. Well, that remains to be seen, but he's optimistic about it. Input costs are coming down. Prices not necessarily. So then you can have gross margin expansion, earnings growth for several years. So we've had, you know, earnings decline for three or four straight quarters. Now we're coming out of that malaise and we're going to have earnings growth this quarter. Now, it may be ratcheted back from where the expectations first were, from 10% to now 5%. But why can't that scenario Weiss work? You gave a look with a little bit of skepticism
to that. Yeah, because there's a lot of hope in that scenario.
Is there hope?
Well, we don't have an accommodative Fed yet, do we? We have a restrictive Fed. It's going to be restrictive even when they cut two, three, four times.
But
it's still restrictive. But
the market is anticipatory. It moves before you have.
It does.
The market started to go down before you got the first hikes.
It does.
Now it's going up because you're getting ahead of the first cuts.
It discounts the cut in the market up to a year in advance. So the question is, have we seen that discount already, given where the level of the market is, number one, number two? Number two, we don't know. We know that historically this level of rates has caused the economy to go into a recession. right? And so now you can argue we're on borrowed time. That's in fact what Jamie Dimon argues, in other words.
Well, so Dimon, he takes issue with the fact that the market is pricing in almost a given,
yes,
that you're going to have a soft landing. He says markets seem to be pricing in 70 to 80% chance of that. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit. I believe the odds are a lot lower than that. He also talks about interest rates soaring to 8% or more in the coming years, that they're prepared for a very broad range of interest rates.
Right. So that's my point. So it's already assuming a soft landing. It's already assuming the economy is going to keep going as strong as it's been. So what will the surprise be? The surprise could be that the economy actually slows, that we're seeing more and more people come back to the workforce because they've depleted their earnings. So now they've got to go and earn some more. So that's a good thing because it brings down labor costs. The point is that there's a lot that has to go right in that scenario. But here's what I'd also, isn't it amazing that over the last month that we've seen rates back up despite the geopolitical risks? Actually, despite the geopolitical risks from last week, where Iran is saying we are going to retaliate and what that could mean for oil. So maybe that's the bull case for rates, you know, in a backwards way, that you find safe landing.
Which groups do you think have the most to live up to as we enter earnings
make
season?
Cap.
I know that's the easy answer, and I ask it with almost like a wink of maybe it's not. Maybe it's all of these other sectors that had the broadening on the belief that you were going to maintain a strong economy and have rates come down. And now those are the ones that are going to be more questioned than mega cap.
To your point,
look at energy.
Look at Caterpillar. Look at the move that's had. Look at the move Deere's recently had.
Look at the move that J.P. Morgan has had.
Without a doubt. Well, you know. But
I'm just saying it's across a whole bunch of other. The stocks that have done best are not just mega cap, especially since the beginning of March.
Absolutely right.
So do the banks have the most to live up to, given what a lot of these stocks have done? Stocks have done quite well. Industrials have done incredibly well.
I still think
chips have done amazingly well.
I still think it's mega cap tech, even though it's the easy answer. Sometimes the easy answer is the right answer. Because they've got, I wouldn't say air under them, they've got the most inflated multiples on near-term earnings and going forward. So,
you know, you get the banks to start off really this week. Yes, we have some others that are relevant to the desk in Delta and CarMax, but what about Jimmy the banks? Because you're going to get your Citi pretty early in the game here along with JPM.
Yeah, and I think with both of them, these are more macroeconomic indicators. I was just talking about the credit card delinquencies a second ago. That's what I'm looking for. That's one of many things we can look for. And I expect those are going to be okay. Not great, but okay. You know, one of the things when we talk about financial, Scott, we're often talking about capital markets with this kind of tone of, geez, capital markets haven't quite come back. And it's true from the IPO point of view, they haven't quite come back. But you know where they really have come back is debt issuance, ironically, with higher interest rates. But debt issuance has been very high, both in investment grade and high yield. That's very positive, not only for investment banking revenues, but actually for trading revenues, because it increases the volumes that are being traded. So financials actually look pretty good for this setup. I do, if you'll allow me to go back to your earlier question of what has the most to prove, I would say it's actually materials, which have had one heck of a run here and are now sporting as a sector a market multiple that equal to the market, S&P 500 overall, whereas their earnings are expected to decline this quarter year over year 5%. So there better be some massive turnaround. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe what, Steve, you're talking about with commodities in general get pumped up by what's going on in the Middle East. It could happen, but that's it. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm saying that's where there's a lot to
prove. Why, Steve, do you still think the most pressure is on the mega caps?
Because I think they're the most visible, number one. I think it's got the highest aspirations from AI, and it's really too soon for AI use cases to keep filtering through. And AI's been around for 10, 20 years, but I'm talking about the new ones they can take next level. But the spending is there. So you've got so many people that have come in, tourists that have come in. Look at Facebook. I mean, that stock's up 2 or 3% every day. Why? And that's not the most expensive of them.
Another record high today.
Yeah, so that's why I think it will be, because that's attracting the most capital.
Target today gets raised to 585, Jenny, at Oppenheimer from 525. They bumped the estimates, and they bumped the target also for obvious reasons. AI driving revenue upside.
Well, the challenge with Meta is that you don't know what the cap is on how much they can earn, right? And it seems at this point to be unlimited. At this point, both the multiple and the earnings growth rate are high teens, low 20s. They're kind of evenly matched. There's a lot of potential there. They've maintained their efficiency. So there's, you know, it's a hard one because you don't know where the ceiling is.
Amazon, top pick at Morgan Stanley. That hits a 52-week high, Jim, today.
It hits an all-time high. And you know what? I've been saying, it's a relatively new purchase for me. I've been saying that its earnings are subdued, that actually if they just cut back a little bit on the R&D spend, these earnings would look a lot better, and that multiple, which I think is around the high 30s, is even cheaper. We don't have to talk about Amazon Web Services. We know that's growing well. The retail system is growing well as consumers are employed. I think there's a lot to like in Amazon.
Weiss, you price target gets bumped to 215 from 200. This is at Morgan Stanley, named a top pick, material upside to retail profit. And also, they have increased confidence in the ability to deliver continued earnings and free cash flow that are pretty nice. Let's just say that.
Yeah, look, it seems like every week we're seeing, or maybe multiple times a week, price increases, targets on Amazon, on Alphabet, on everything. So I tend to ignore them. I own the stock. I'm staying with it. But None of them are cheap. It's just a question, am I willing to stay there in advance of them growing into their valuation?
None of them are cheap?
I think Alphabet is cheap, actually. I do think Alphabet's cheap, roughly a market multiple. And I think it's been, you know, maligned for really the wrong reasons.
Apple's gotten cheaper.
I think Apple deserves to be cheap. I think Apple was overpriced for years.
The chart's terrible.
They've had no growth.
The chart
is
terrible.
No growth in revenue, no growth in earnings.
I mean, on a fundamental point of view, I would disagree with you, but on a chart point of view,
they've been flat in revenue and earnings for an extended period of time, for a couple of years. How can you disagree?
I would love some appreciation for being the OG on Apple's doing nothing.
All right, well, actually, let me defend it. I'll defend it.
No,
either
of you disagree that revenue and earnings have been flat for an extended period of time?
Yeah, I've been saying it since we were at Englewood Cliffs.
I think you're missing it.
Disagree, so you
no,
can't.
No, I can't.
You're missing
I
a
agree.
Few things here. And I'm not adding to it here, but I will add to it when it stops going down, when the chart doesn't look as bad as it looks right now. Why? I mean, the service margins we know are better than the product margins. The ecosystem with the iPhone, I don't know anybody. Nobody in my life goes out and buys an Android. I mean, nobody. I don't know if I self-select friends that way, but
that's
no,
not,
you know,
that's not the question. That's
no,
the question.
Let me finish. The fact of the matter is this company generates so much cash flow that they buy back a ton of shares. And I don't care if net income is flat when it'll eventually inflect because the earnings per share are going higher as the denominator goes down.
So you put in financial engineering versus
right.
true
I don't
fundamental.
And you
I don't
probably
consider
don't
that
give that
financial
a market
engineering.
Premium.
I consider that economic outperformance. You can only do that if you have the cash flows with which to do it.
You've owned Apple many, many times, so you don't own it now.
I don't. I haven't owned it for a long time.
Well, what's a long time? I mean,
a few years.
None of the issues that you raise necessarily have colored your opinion on owning the stock in the past.
No, it has. It has. The lack of innovation and the lack of...
No, but you've owned the stock while you've criticized the lack of innovation or perceived lack.
I have. I used to own it way in front of earnings releases because new product releases because you have to sell on the news, right? That's been consistent.
Of times this stock runs up right into the number.
Yeah, and now
it's been down into the number. So the
right.
pressure in some respects you could say is a little lighter.
Right.
You're also going to have the ramp into what we think is going to be an AI announcement in June.
Who knows?
Or,
now they're talking about robots in the home. We're a long way away from
it's
that,
a right. It's right at support.
Let me just finish my thought. So when I've owned it in the past, it's been a lot cheaper. Trading at this premium to the market, I have no interest in owning it. When I owned it in the past, revenue was growing, earnings were growing. Now they're not.
Okay, but or you could say, which you do, like sometimes you're a trader, sometimes you're an investor. In Apple, it strikes me that you've been more of a trader than an investor.
Yeah,
that's probably the easier answer there, right?
I mean,
you've played
gambling,
it as a trade, but doesn't seem like
it's long
term.
You know, they've owned it forever, and you know, I mean, they've got such monstrous gains in it. I'm not going to sell it. I can wait out. I don't think it's going to go down as much as a tax payment would. And at some point, maybe it reverses and goes higher.
I'm going to buy it when it's got a 4% dividend yield. Won't that be amazing?
Yeah.
You wake us up when that happens. All right, coming up, we'll do our calls of the day. We have a bullish analyst note today on BlackRock, one on Schwab and Netflix, a few more too. We'll find out how the committee's playing that next.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Visit odfl.com to learn more.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
All right, we're back. Let's do calls of the day now. We're going to start with BlackRock. Target goes to $1,013 from $1,000 while they're generous over at Morgan Stanley. Jimmy?
It's actually, a pretty bold target. That's a 25% price rise from where we are now. I think it can actually happen, though, and I really think this is a simple story. Asset prices in financial markets are going higher. They are higher by a meaningful amount than they were at the beginning of the year. BlackRock is an assets under management business. Their fees go up as the assets go up, and there are flows coming into their business because they've got all sorts of different products, including crypto that they've started this quarter. So I think all the cylinders are firing here. It's a large rise to get to 1,000, and I think they'll do it.
Okay. The earnings, by the way, are before the bell on Friday. Charles Schwab, price target to 74 from 68. Jenny at Barclays, the earnings are a week from today.
Right. So if BlackRock was a bold price target increase, this is an unbold price
target
increase.
It's a slow news day,
right?
Jenny.
It must be.
$13 or
right.
$1,000.
I mean, we're talking about a $2 price increase, so a 2% increase. But the point of the upgrade is very important, which is Schwab is doing an incredible job. They've just seen assets grow to $8.9 trillion, which is up 20% year over year. They saw $31 billion coming in February. And you may remember about this time last year, Schwab got slaughtered. Why? Because after SVB and after people started paying attention to their cash balances, money moved into money market funds. There was all this cash sorting. Everybody thought that was too expensive for Schwab. And so it's since recovered from them. This is a great company with really serious earnings growth ahead and trading at about 14 times. So I'd take a look at it here. I think there's more upside than 2%.
Been a lot of love lately for Netflix. We get two more price target hikes. Weiss today, we go 725 at Cowen. They reiterate buy. And J.P. Morgan goes 650 from 610. They reiterate overweight. April 18th earnings, 52-week high today. Weiss.
Yeah, look, I keep saying it's too small a position for me to get very excited about this. I'd love to buy more. I should have been braver when it collapsed before. But look, they're the winner. Period. End of story.
I need to make one correction. I said 14 times on Schwab. It's 19 times. Sorry, that's significant.
Okay. All right, thank you. Transocean. Jimmy, price target to $9 from $5.50. So we're at $6.61. That's Susquehanna. They do upgrade it as well from neutral to positive on favorable crude prices.
There was a very important piece of news last week. The Deepwater Asgard, one of their rigs, got a new contract, actually a contract extension at a day rate above $500,000 per day. That is, to my knowledge, the first contract above $500,000 since before the pandemic, actually going back about 10 years now. That's a huge moment. It indicates that supply in the offshore drilling market is very, very tight. Why this is positive for Transocean is because they've got 11 cold stacked rigs that haven't been used in years. There's very little going on in new build. Exploration and production companies clearly need these rigs. That's why the plus $500,000 contract for Deepwater Asgard occurred. That means it's highly likely that these cold stacked rigs are going to be brought back online. That's in no analysts' models that I've seen.
All right, the headlines now from Contessa Brewer. Hi, Contessa.
Hey there, Scott. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan will meet the relatives of Hamas hostages tonight. It comes after CIA Director William Burns was in Cairo over the weekend working on a possible hostage deal and a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Sullivan last met with the families of the hostages in January. A program meant to give patients early access to promising drugs may not be as beneficial as first thought. According to a new study from the Journal of the American Medical Association, many cancer drugs that were granted accelerated approval by the FDA program were still unproven after 5 years in use. The program originally was created in the early 90s to fast-track HIV medications, and now 85% of the early approvals go to cancer drugs. And Uber Eats is launching a short-form video feed, a lot like, I guess, TikTok, to help restaurants boost visibility and showcase their menus. According to TechCrunch, Uber Eats emphasized that the videos are not ads and that merchants would not be charged for placement. The feature is being tested in New York, San Francisco, and Toronto, which is exactly what we need. More content when it comes to food. Scott.
Always. Contessa, thank you. Contessa Brewer up next. The new gold rush. Bob Pisani sitting down with the head of the world's largest gold ETF. Metal hitting another fresh all-time high. There's the chart. We're back in two.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Methane management is a critical part of achieving a lower carbon future. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. They're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. And they've trialed over 13 advanced detection technologies, including drones and satellites. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.
All right, welcome back. Gold hitting another fresh all-time high today. For more on what's driving this record run, let's get to Bob Pisani now with today's ETF Edge. And it's been quite a run, Bob.
It's been one heck of a run, Scotty. Gold is one of the star performers this year, up 13% to an historic high, outperforming stocks and even bonds. What is driving gold? Let's talk to one of the world's great gold experts. George Milling Stanley is the chief gold strategist at State Street Global Advisors. George oversees and helped launch the Spider Gold Shares, GLD. That's the world's largest gold ETF. 20 years ago when he was at the World Gold Council, and I covered that one. We go back a long way. Good to see you. Why is gold hitting a new high?
I think it's a whole bunch of reasons, never just one thing. We've got decent jewelry demand throughout the emerging markets. China's economy is recovering. We're looking for a rebound there. We've got good, solid central bank demand. And investment demand seems to be coming back. It's been there in bars and coins. It's also coming back in gold ETFs right now.
So China demand strong, yep. India demand strong. They're the two biggest consumers, and central banks are buying.
Yep.
Okay. Are young people buying gold? I keep getting asked all the time. Is this here in the United States, do they have any interest, or is this an old fuddy-duddy kind of thing?
I always thought it was my cohort and older, right? The oldest baby boomers and even older than that that understood gold best. But State Street did a survey just recently, and we found out that millennials had overtaken not just Gen X, but also my generation, the boomers as well. They have much more enthusiasm for gold, and they own more gold than we do.
Why do they own? What is the enthusiasm based on? Why are they excited?
I think that they realize the real benefits of diversification. They realize that, you know, gold has this twofold promise. It can, over time, it can help to enhance returns, and all the time it is going to be reducing volatility, reducing risk. That's a great twofer.
But there's a lot of competition out there, even for young people's dollars. Bitcoin ETFs, isn't that not competition for gold? Do you have to push, advertise gold more now that the Bitcoin ETFs are out?
I don't think so. They do different jobs, you know? Basically, the contribution that Bitcoin, whether they're ETFs or in any other format, make to portfolio performance is based entirely on returns. It doesn't have that reduction in volatility, which is one of the main reasons that people like gold.
What about gold as a hedge against inflation? You and I have been talking about this for 20 years. The academic evidence is really very mixed that it's not necessarily a hedge against inflation, yet people continue to believe that. Why are people holding on to gold right now? Is it a hedge?
I think it's a hedge against inflation. I think it's a hedge against potential weakness in equities and in the dollar. saying that all of those things are really important. And the important thing is the real purpose of gold in terms of being a hedge against inflation. Gold is a very good protection against sustained high inflation. Inflation over 5% a year for more than 2 years, gold really performs very well. Anything other than that, not necessarily.
These central banks, why are they so interested in suddenly buying more? They've always held gold, but why are they buying it all of a sudden? They seem to be pushing up their holdings.
Yeah, I think emerging market central banks have come to the realization that they own more than 2/3 of their official reserves in U.S. dollar denominated debt and less than 5% in gold. And they think that is a dangerous skew.
So even central banks have to diversify. We always talk about diversifying here on CNBC. Even central banks have to diversify.
Bob, it's good for you. It's good for me. It's good for every investor, including central bankers.
George, good to see you as always. We got much more coming up on gold and where to invest coming up on ETF Edge. That's 1:10 p.m. Eastern Time. ETFEdge.cnbc.com. Scotty, back to you.
All right, Bob. Appreciate that. Thank you, Bob Pisani. Up next, a $6.6 billion win for Taiwan Semi. That stock rallying after landing some big money from the U.S. government. Steve Weiss is in that name. We break down the trade. We'll do it next. Welcome back. Chart of the day is Taiwan Semi. That after winning that $6.6 billion grant from the U.S. government, the CHIPS Act, for its Arizona factory. So there's the stock today. Good for about 1.5%. Weiss, what do you make of this news? What do you think it means for the stock longer term?
For long term, it's great. I mean, if you take a look at Taiwan Semi, it's one of the cheapest semi stocks out there. It's less than a market multiple this year and about 3/4 of a market multiple for next year. Compared to Broadcom, for example, great company. But after this year, the bounce back in revenues, Broadcom, it's got single-digit revenue growth and earnings growth versus this company, which has mid-20s, EBITDA growth, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the reasons is obviously it's in Taiwan. The other reason being that it's capital intensive, the business they're in, because they're a foundry. But nonetheless, the growth is the growth. So I think the stock is way undervalued here.
Okay. Applied Materials, that's AMAT, upgraded to overweight at Cantor today. The price target to 260. That from 220. They talk about secular tailwinds from AI and a cyclical recovery. Jimmy, you own that name specifically, along with NXP and NVIDIA, as we know. But give me something on AMAT.
I will. You know, it's not just a cyclical play here. It's more of a secular play. We just were mentioning the CHIPS Act. And the basic fact is that semiconductor plants are being built all over this country. There's news in the last couple of days that Samsung is going to increase its capital expenditure spend in Taylor, Texas, outside of Austin, from $17 billion to $44 billion. That's an incremental $27 billion that they're spending on new chip plants. You know what needs to go in there? Capital equipment for semiconductors. That includes applied materials equipment. It includes ASML lithography equipment. But the basic fact is there is a secular trend here towards building more semiconductor plants, which applies positively to AMAT and ASML.
All right. So KeyBank is out with some price target increases today and a downgrade. So they take NVIDIA to 1200. They take Qualcomm to 205. They take Micron to 150. They do downgrade Skyworks, though. And that's from overweight to sector weight. Now, Jenny, which you own this stock, which I'm like, okay, so you own Skyworks, but you won't earn, you won't own Apple. Skyworks, a lot of the chips have done amazingly well. Skyworks has not, maybe because Apple hasn't, and it's a supplier. So Skyworks is down 7% on the year. I want to know why you own it if you're so against owning Apple.
So it's just different, right? So what Skyworks does is they make chips that enable communications like Wi-Fi, satellite, network radio. And what I think is interesting about what Jim said, Steve said, and this down or in this report where some are upgraded, some are downgraded, is each of these semi companies has very unique characteristics. And they're unique within like the secular themes and they're unique within the cyclical themes. And so KeyBank is saying, the reason that we're downgrading Skyworks is because it's going to be difficult to grow now as smartphone growth matures. But what do we know? We know that regardless of whether smartphone growth matures or not, all we're doing is consuming more and more and more. And so as that happens, there's perpetual demand for what Skyworks does. We think, and this is where we disagree, we think that it's not a smartphone growth maturity thing. It's just a cyclical impact to Skyworks, and that's why they were down. Because if you look at their earnings are down like 19% this year.
So isn't Apple and a slowdown in its own smartphone sales just a cyclical event as well?
Yes, but if you think about it, as new smartphones are made, more and more of Skyworks chips need to go on them. So even
though— And Apple ones too, though.
Apple ones, everyone. So even if you're buying just like, even if your upgrade cycle on a new phone has slowed, the next phone you buy is likely to have way more chips. The next computer you buy is going to have way more of Skyworks chips. So what we saw following the pandemic was a huge pull forward, right? Then there was all this inventory distortion. We think that Skyworks is just about to come out of that. And so if you look at them, and this goes into why do you own it versus others, you know, in our disciplined growth strategy, which is where this is, we have a 5% or better free cash flow yield to get into the portfolio. This has a 9% free cash flow yield on it. It's minting cash. This is the one that's trading at 14 times earnings. And if you look at their earnings, they're down 19% this year, but the next year they're expected to grow by 18%. And then about 19% the following year. So as we all know with cyclicals, you need to be early because the thing changes fast and furious. So I think there's a slight disconnection from as simple as I don't like Apple. I don't like Apple, not for the company, but I don't like Apple, which has been true all along because of that valuation, right? I have said their earnings are growing mid-single digits. The multiple is 23 times. The multiple is 12.
Well, the multiple, but you can't.
But that's
but
the, what
I've
complained
about.
All
along point that you're making, Apple's valuation hasn't always been
as long
times.
As I've disliked Apple.
It's been a lot cheaper, especially it's been half that when you back out the cash.
But as long as I've been complaining about Apple since I've been on this show, and as long as I've been saying Apple should be dead money, my argument has not been against the company whatsoever. My argument's been on valuation, where I've said their earnings are growing mid-single digits, the multiple is a premium to the market. That math doesn't work for me. So what's the difference with Skyworks? 14 times earnings. Once we get past this year, 18% earnings growth, 19% earnings growth, and minting cash. The valuation is different. It's not just a story that I'm telling. It's a valuation difference.
All right, we're going to do. We're going to talk to Mike Santoli next for his midday word. All right, we're back. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, is here with his midday word. So I'm looking at your writing today.
Yeah.
You've made the point too that as we have sort of assessed where we are, that bull markets don't typically end at a time when the economy is good like this.
Or because it's good.
Or because it's good. The line, yes, that's better said. The line that sticks to me in your note today is a patient, ambivalent Fed can be fine with Wall Street if the economy stays firm while rate cuts are awaited.
That's right.
Expand.
Well, I mean, first of all, the inflation question is so central. And the reason that the market would have a problem with the Fed being more patient and pushing it off is if, one, the economy were suddenly weakening below the headline data. And there were some people making this case, by the way. Some people are pointing to, oh, it's all part-time jobs. Don't get excited about that jobs number. There's actually some loosening up. Consumer companies talking about demand and traffic falling off. Now, I'm not saying that's the prevailing view, but if you really thought that were the case, then you got to worry about a patient Fed. The other piece of it is, the Fed has told you if inflation more or less tracks what they expect, they're cutting. So if they're not cutting, it means inflation's not tracking the right way. So those two things created a little bit of an issue for the market. I think what's happened here is nothing about the big picture has changed in terms of this bull market kind of earned the benefit of the doubt with how broad it was and how persistent it was. But it doesn't mean the short term you can't have some friction and you're dealing with yields breaking out of their range. You're dealing with oil pushing up against the upper end of its range. I think it makes sense, you know, that we are hesitating here, let's say.
All right, we'll see on closing bell. Okay. We will continue that conversation. Mike Santoli up next. Two big winners, two big losers from today's session. We're back right after this. After this quick breakdown, we're still holding on to gains on the S&P and the Dow. We're back. Two big winners, two big losers. MicroStrategy reiterated buy at benchmark today. Now, it's obviously getting a nice bump from Bitcoin at 72,000. Why, is you still in Bitcoin or no?
Yes, I do, Scott.
Okay. It's been volatile lately.
Diamond hands, remember.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. For the moment. For a trade?
They'll turn to paper soon enough.
I'm glad you said that, not me. But if I did, it would have been accurate anyway. All right. Tesla, you still short that?
I am still short, and I'm thinking short more.
You are?
Solar City, great synergies. Funding secured. We're not discounting the latest ones by favors. We're not discounting vehicles and robo-taxis August 8th. The lemmings are going into it. I would short it right here. Sell if you own it.
All right. So, Jimmy, we have these talks with Paramount and others, let's just say. Now, what's your point now on this stock?
Besides the fact that I'm an idiot, which I'll make every time we talk about this, I will say
we finally agree on something.
All right, but let me just say this. There's a lot
Everyone's
of news items coming out. None of them make sense. The idea we talked about this Friday, the idea that they're going to raise $3 billion in equity capital at this price, to me, just doesn't make any sense. They got $2.5 billion of cash on the balance sheet. They have no meaningful debt maturities until 2027. The idea that they're going to buy Ellison's studio for stock makes no sense at this price, which they've been turning around the company. The idea that they turned down a deal from Apollo for $26 billion makes no sense. Here's my point. When things don't make sense, just sit back. Don't do anything. I'm certainly not putting new money into it, Scott. I don't recommend anybody put new money into it, but I'm not selling on all this ridiculous noise either.
You probably wish you sold it already
a long
time ago.
I
think that was implicit in your first comment.
I'll be explicit. I am an idiot for owning Paramount.
Stop that's it, my Jim, favorite soundbite. Been doing this show 14 years. That's my favorite soundbite ever.
Final
Such a
trades
negative spin.
Next. The billionaire investor Mark Lazary will join me on Closing Bell today, 3 o'clock Eastern. That's an exclusive. Talk markets, talk the Fed, talk his new sports fund as well. So we got a whole thing to discuss with Mr. Lazary. Look forward to that. We'll do final trades right now. Farmer Jim, what you got?
Delta Airlines reports Wednesday. Traffic is good. Prices are high. Should be a good report.
Stephen Weiss.
Uber. It's the other side of the Tesla trade. It's a good opportunity with the stock down.
Okay. And Jenny?
Sticking with cars. Aptiv, 12%, 12 times earnings growth, 20% earnings.
All right. We are green across the board. We'll see you in a couple hours on Closing Bell. The exchange is down.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.